This show is live and local. It's your local performance connection. The Illinois Symphony this weekend will give the first concerts of its season, of its official season, tonight and tomorrow. Tonight in Bloomington and tomorrow night in Springfield. And two local connections there. Donato Cabrera is the guest conductor. He's also the first of the candidates for music director, who were all the guest conductors this season. And he actually attended the University of Illinois, got his master's degree in conducting here. And pianist Awadajan Pratt is performing with the orchestra, and he's from Normal, Illinois. And I'll be talking with Donato Cabrera in the later portion of the program. But first up, it's Erin Bode, who is in St. Louis, and her Erin Bode group will be at Sangamon Auditorium in Springfield tonight at 8 o'clock. She is the singer of the group, and we'll hear a bit about her and their music beginning right now. Was a song called Telescope. It comes off of the new CD by the Erin Bode group called Photograph. And they're going to be at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois Springfield on Friday night, tonight as we're airing this at 8 o'clock. And on the phone with me right now is Erin Bode herself. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So you're in St. Louis at the moment, right?
Yes.
Born and bred?
I'm actually originally from Minnesota, so I'm a transplant to St. Louis in the last 10 years or so, but I call it home now, and so I have two homes, really.
I hear a little bit of the accent now that you mentioned it.
Well, maybe it's just not a St. Louis accent.
it's in the O's.
Yeah, that's where you'll find it.
Yeah. So it's not all that common for a poppy jazz group singer to have a classical background. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, when I was a kid, I was exposed to all different kinds of music. My mother, actually, when she was going to the University of Minnesota, she was an usher at Northrop Auditorium and was really influenced by all the fantastic music that came through to the University of Minnesota. And she had a great record collection of classical music, along with a lot of great folk music. So combine that with what I was hearing on the radio and what my brothers and sisters were listening to, I was exposed to a wide variety. And I decided I wanted to study classical music in college, and so I started at the University of Minnesota. And I was majoring in vocal performance. And then, in order to get a slightly more intimate education experience, I transferred to Webster University in St. Louis. And so I got a little bit of both worlds. I got a really big school and then a very small school. And both had huge benefits, and I really enjoyed it. But just towards the end of my time at Webster University, I kind of veered off the classical road and started singing out in restaurants with some friends of mine from the jazz department at Webster. And I just realized that this was something where I could really put my own voice to and create something different and new. And so I just kept with it and have had many years of performing since then. So
And you've used some of those influences from the listening days with your family in creating your present sound, do you think?
yeah, I think so. You know, we when I get together to write with my partner in music, Adam, he's our piano player, and he and I write a lot of the original music for the group. And when we get together, we do a lot of listening. We'll kind of talk about, you know, this is a record that I've always liked, or this is something that I've heard that I think we could incorporate somewhere. And you know, then we just kind of see what happens. But definitely, you know, we had a lot in common, Adam and I, in our listening. His parents were very influential in his musical upbringing, and they listened to a lot of records. So we try to, you know, have the influences that have made us most passionate about music come out in what we do. So,
Is he one of the ones that does he date back to your college days?
yeah, actually, I first sang with him before he went to college. Before he went off to New York to go to college. I was probably a sophomore in college or a junior, I guess. And he was just about to leave for New York to go to the new school, and so I played with him just a couple times before that. But then after he came home, we started a group together, and yeah, we've been working together ever since. He and my husband Sid, who plays bass in the group, the three of us have been working together for about almost 9 years now.
So it's Sidney Rodway is his name. And then how do you say Adam's last name?
Manus.
Adam Manus. So he's the pianist and also the guitarist here. And then your drummer, Mark Kallenberg. Where does he come into the picture? When did
Well,
he come into the picture?
he and Adam went to school. He's from St. Louis, so we've known him for many years, but he and Adam went to the new school at the same time. And he has just recently moved back to St. Louis. He lived out in New York for many years after going to school, and he plays all over the world. In fact, he won't be joining us on Friday night because he's off on tour somewhere. But he's just a fantastic drummer, and I'm just so grateful that I get to work with these three guys. They all have so many years of experience and are really passionate about doing this, you know. And it takes a lot of determination to keep at it and keep making new music. And they're all fully on board, and we have a wonderful time together.
So, are you just not coming with the drummer, or you've got a sub for this gig?
We have a sub, but he's another great drummer who lives in Illinois, actually, and he's just home from New York. He lives in New York, but he came home for a couple weeks. He went to the Manhattan School of Music and is still out in New York, but we're really grateful that he's around for this performance because he'll be a wonderful asset. We also are being joined by a wonderful cellist who we've been working with for the past several months, and she'll be in addition, so there'll be five of us together.
So, who's your cellist?
Her name is Valentina Takova, and she's originally from Bulgaria. but moved here during college. She went to Yale University and is living in St. Louis now. So.
And your drummer?
And it'll be Sean Mullins. I forgot
Sean
to tell
Mullins.
You his name.
Yeah. Well, I just want to give credit where credit is due.
Absolutely.
And all of that.
Mm-hmm.
The song we played does come off of your new album, and it's mm-hmm. it's listed here as your sophomore effort, would suggest the second, but you have a number of others. Does that mean sophomore effort for this particular band?
No, I'm not sure why it says that.
Or is that just an error?
It could be an error, yeah. Yeah, this is actually our fourth record as a band that just features our regular music. We also have a Christmas record, but it's a fourth record as a regular release. And so we're really pleased that we have been able to record so many records over the years.
Have you found, well, actually, before we talk about it anymore, let's play something from the next most recent one.
Yeah, it's our third CD called The Little Garden, yeah.
Yeah, and this song is called Chasing After You. Anything to say about it before we play it?
We had a lot of fun writing this song. We wanted to write a love song from a perspective of kind of being, playful and a little bit manipulative by suggesting that if you fall in love with me and we get together, we can help the environment.
Oh, okay. That's a different perspective.
Yeah, it is a different perspective.
Well, there's so many love songs in this world. Who needs another regular one? So
You're
why
right.
not?
That's kind of our thought on that.
Your environmental love song.
Yeah.
It's Chasing After You. And this is your tune?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Aaron Bodie. And she's with the Aaron Bodie Group, of course. And they'll be at the Sangamon Auditorium at U of I Springfield tonight at 8 o'clock. And you're hearing Aaron on Live and Local on FM 90.9. The song's called Chasing After You by the Aaron Bodie Group. Aaron Bodie's the vocalist, and she's with me here on the phone from St. Louis before they play tonight at Sangamon Auditorium in Springfield. It's an 8 o'clock gig, and you're listening to Live and Local here on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. So I started to ask before we played that song if you've noticed or even intended a particular progress in the sound of the group from your first CD, which from 2006, Over and Over, to the current one, which just came out, last year, called Photograph.
Yeah, well, I guess there were probably 2 years between each recording, and we just, we're constantly trying to evolve our sound, but in a natural way. I mean, we perform, four nights a week, so our sound is going to change, regardless of if we try or not. But So between the albums Over and Over and The Little Garden, I think it's just a natural progression of our songwriting. It kind of evolved over those 2 years, and I'm very pleased with the growth that we've had between albums. So just like between Over and Over, you'll see a difference between that and The Little Garden. Between The Little Garden and Photograph, we tried to incorporate some different instruments. We actually used some electronic instruments on Photograph to kind of hint at some of the music we grew up listening to in the 80s. And we just tried different things. And we often will work a little bit off of the new songs that we try out in our performances and the response that they get from the audience. And then we, kind of make a note that these have been really well received and we want to make sure to record them. And so
there's a sound in that I heard a number of times that it sounds to me like an old-fashioned Fender Rhodes.
Yes.
Is he actually using one of those?
Yeah, Adam has actually a couple Fender Rhodes pianos. And for many years we had been playing with Fender Rhodes. You'll see a little bit different instrumentation at the concert and at the University of Illinois, where, like I mentioned, we have a cellist with us. My husband plays upright bass, and he does a lot of bowing on the bass. And then Adam will be playing additional instruments to the piano, like glockenspiel and melodica and accordion, and along with guitar. So we try to change things up for our own sanity and for the listener as well.
So he's a multi-keyboardist.
Yes, he is. Anything with a keyboard, he will pick up and install in our music.
And for those who don't know, a melodic is one of those, it looks like a toy, depending upon mm-hmm. what version he's got, where you blow into the thing, and then it's this tiny little keyboard. It's like a keyboard flute in a way.
It is.
Mm-hmm. Sort of a, it was very strange first time I actually, there's a guy in town here who plays that pretty regularly on various gigs.
Mm-hmm.
And
And it's related to the accordion and harmonica, so it has that reed kind of sound that you'll hear in an accordion. So it's something I'm surprised more people don't use them, because they have a quite pleasing sound and they're very easy to use.
Yeah, there's not too many keys, so you can't be terribly virtuosic on them, I suppose,
exactly.
Or don't need to worry
yeah.
about it that much. Your list, among some pop influences, some world music that you've tried to incorporate into some of your songs. Can you give me any examples?
Well, I think when I was growing up, my parents, as I said, exposed us to lots of different music, and world music was definitely a part of that. But I had, when I was probably in middle school, was when the CD player came out. And the first CD that my family ever acquired was Paul Simon's Graceland, so I probably listened to it 100 times, because we didn't have many CDs, and it's probably one of the best records, I think, that came out of that time period. And, Paul Simon made such brilliant use of these wonderful musicians from South Africa, and that became one of the most influential records in my life. And I think it's really amazing that when I was, I think, 27 or 8, I was asked to go with an organization that's based here in St. Louis. They do a lot of disaster relief and humanitarian aid to people that need it. They're called LCMS, World Relief and Human Care. And they asked if my group and I would like to travel to South Africa to work with a group of young students at a school they sponsor in order to raise money for their scholarships and building improvements and things. They wanted to make a recording of these kids along with us. And so I went to South Africa with my group, and we had such an amazing time working with these young kids who are incredibly talented. And we put together a CD that, the money that comes in from it goes back to the school to help with their scholarships and things. And you can't help but have music like that or an experience like that influence the rest of what you do. Especially our philosophy on music has evolved greatly from that experience, and so I hope that there are elements of that music in what we do now. I'm sure there are.
Well, sometimes it's subtle, sometimes it's unconscious, and sometimes it's a little more overt.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Aaron, it's nice to talk to you. Let's wish we had a little bit more time, but that's the nature of radio.
Yes.
And we will have a chance to go out with another song from your new CD. It's called Photograph. The CD is called Photograph. The song is called Joseph. Is this after a person we should know anything about, or does the song explain it?
Well, you probably will get it if you are familiar with Joseph from the Old Testament. This is, you know, the musical Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. This is that guy. And we were searching for a solution to an opening line that we came up with for the music that we were working on, and we couldn't figure out what to do with it. It was, I've got a magic potion, and I'll whisper in your ear. It's an interesting notion. We should make you disappear, which is a really strange opening line, and we finally had to figure out, what are we going to do with this line? And we thought of this story, which made it finally make sense. So we wrote a song around Joseph.
Well, you have to listen to it and figure out how they made sense of it here.
Yeah.
It's the Aaron Bodie of the Aaron Bodie Group. They're going to be at the University of Illinois Springfield's Sangamon Auditorium tonight at 8 o'clock. And for more information on those concerts, it's uis.edu/Sangamon, I believe, Sangamon, or just Google Sangamon Auditorium. And for more information on Aaron Bodie and her group, your web address is?
AaronBodie.com.
And that's ErinBode.
Yes.
.com. Aaron, thanks very much for joining us. It's great to hear your music.
Thank you so much for having me.
I got a magic potion, and I'll whisper in your ear. It's an interesting notion, we could make you disappear. And we'll survive the cause. I know we'll have to pay. But you are loved the most, so we're throwing you away. Go with it, Joseph. Go with it, Joseph. Go.
Song's called called Joseph, from the recent CD called Photograph by the Aaron Bodie Group. Aaron Bodie, the vocalist, and they'll be at Sangamon Auditorium on the University of Illinois at Springfield campus tonight at 8 o'clock. You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. Stay tuned next for my conversation with Donato Cabrera, who is the guest conductor this week, tonight and tomorrow. With the Illinois Symphony Orchestra. They're playing at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts tonight at 8 and at Sangamon Auditorium tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. And he is one of the music director candidates who are all auditioning through their concerts this season. Support for our show today on FM 90.9 comes in part from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods on the corner of 6th and University in Champaign, providing Champaign-Urbana with an international selection of chocolates, cheeses, oils, balsamic vinegar, jams, spices, barbecue sauces, and more. World Harvest invites you to join them in supporting public radio. And you can have every pledge go farther when you give to our Member Match Fund. Your contribution now before our pledge drive begins. Next week, we'll build a challenge to urge more listeners to become supporters during the kickoff Power Hour, which will be next Thursday, the 20th, from 7 to 8 a.m. You can send your check now to WILL Radio, 300 North Goodwin in Urbana, Illinois, 61801, or if it's easier, give online at willpledge.org, willpledge.org. We just heard the opening portion of The Chairman Dances, which is music by John Adams, which we've actually talked about here on this show fairly recently. It's, as it's called sometimes, an outtake of his opera Nixon in China. It's going to be the opening music on this weekend's concerts by the Illinois Symphony Orchestra in Bloomington and Springfield. And it will be led by guest conductor Donato Cabrera, who is one of the candidates to be music director of the Illinois Symphony. Karen Lynn Deal finished last year, and so this year is being given over to the various candidates for the job. And as it happens, Don, if he doesn't mind if I call him that, because that's how I knew him when he was here at the University of Illinois for a couple of years studying with Professor Donald Schleicher, a longer ago than I realized. So welcome back to the area.
So glad to be back. This is a wonderful opportunity to say hello to all of my remaining friends that are still in Champaign-Urbana.
Yeah, how many might those be?
I think it's a handful, really, and some of them are playing in the Illinois Symphony now.
Oh, really?
Yes, principal clarinet is Dana Hotel, who was getting her undergrad at the time, and she was also working on the staff as an intern for the symphony orchestra. So we work together quite a bit. So we haven't had our first rehearsal yet, but when we do, I'll be very happy to see her again.
Yeah, I'm sure. I didn't know she was. I remember her, and I didn't know she was there. So that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
So let's kind of start from the beginning, or the beginning since the University of Illinois. Where did you go from here? I'm kind of interested in what was the progress of getting to where you are now, which is with the San Francisco Symphony and the Green Bay Symphony, and now potentially of the Illinois Symphony.
Well, after I finished my master's at the University of Illinois in 1998, and I stayed one extra year there, and then I applied to start a doctorate at Indiana University Bloomington. And I went there for 1 year, the 99-2000 academic year. And about halfway through, I realized that pursuing a doctorate wasn't probably what I wanted to do for the next 5 or 6 years. And I thought that I should try my best to give it a chance, go for trying to have a professional career as a conductor. So at that time, the Manhattan School of Music started advertising the fact that they were going to start up a new conducting program with the then music director of the New Jersey Symphony Orchestra, Zdeněk Makal. Perhaps some of our Midwestern audiences may know him as the former music director of the Milwaukee Symphony. But at that point, he was the music director of the New Jersey Symphony, and he was going to be the conducting teacher for this new program. So I thought that would be very interesting. In fact, it would be the only conducting program that was being led by a conductor of that stature that had conducted, well, almost every major American and European orchestra by that point. And I thought he would have a lot of insight and, frankly, connections that would might help me in my dreams. So I applied. I think there were probably 150 or so tapes that were sent in. And I was one of seven who was invited to New York City to conduct the orchestra with Maestro McCall looking on. And I was lucky to be one of the two people chosen to be the inaugural class of this conducting program. So when the spring semester ended in Indiana, I think it was May 8th of 2000, on May 9th, I packed up my car and drove off to New York City. Found an apartment rather quickly, luckily, and I noticed that the final concert of Manhattan School of Music's semester was just about to happen, and McCall was conducting, so I showed up. He wasn't expecting to see me there at all, but he looked at me and said, you know, I need an assistant conductor actually right now, or actually next week, for Mahler's Second Symphony with the New Jersey Symphony. What are you doing? Of course, you know, I wasn't doing anything. I was trying to look, actually, to be honest, to look for a job to help pay rent. And so basically within 48 hours of moving to New York City, I had my first job as an assistant conductor for performances of Mahler's Second Symphony. So needless to say, it was probably the best move of my life, and New York remained that for me. It was a place where I was able to, at any given day, sneak into a rehearsal of any great visiting orchestra at Carnegie Hall to observe the master conductors at work, or the same thing with the New York Philharmonic or the Metropolitan Opera, and it was just a hotbed. It was just, you can't imagine what it's like to have those opportunities just to observe these wonderful musicians and the world's greatest orchestras. So I got an artist diploma rather than a doctorate, which is basically like another form of a master's degree that focuses on performance at the Manhattan School of Music. And I have to say, the conducting program was absolutely well thought out, perfectly thought out. They had at my disposal once a week, I think it was every Monday night, I had a conductor's orchestra it was a two-hour class, and I had the orchestra for an hour, and the other conducting student had the orchestra for an hour, and the repertoire changed every week. So I went through, in those 2 years, I went through so much music, and McCall would be at those sessions every week, and I learned so much. Was really a fantastic compliment to the studies I had at University of Illinois, frankly. So when I graduated, I had a year of being in the desert, as it were. I only had 2 weeks' worth of concerts with educational concerts with the New Jersey Symphony. But after that year, I was then hired to be the next assistant for the New Jersey Symphony. So that was in 2003. I did that for 3 years, and in the meantime, I met a faculty member of Music Academy de West, which I was an assistant conductor for one summer, and this pianist worked during the season, at San Francisco Opera and the Metropolitan Opera. And when the assistant conductor of the San Francisco Opera announced the fact that she was leaving in 2004, she announced, he quickly emailed me and quickly emailed the then music director of the San Francisco Opera, Donald Runicles, told him about me, and when he came to New York to conduct a run of performances of Der Rosenkavalier at the Met, we met, and we hit it off, and he hired me to be the next music director, the next associate conductor of the San Francisco Opera. While I was in New York, after graduating from Manhattan School and working with the New Jersey Symphony, I was approached by some friends of mine, that one of whom was my roommate, to start a new music ensemble. And that was a really exciting venture we did. We started what is, it's still in existence, called the American Contemporary Music Ensemble, ACME for short, and it still is performing to this day, and it's a mixture of classic contemporary pieces of music, if you could call it that, that were have been composed in the last 30 or 40 years, mixed with brand new pieces, and of mostly usually of our friends of ours, like Nico Muley and Sean Shepard and so forth. So we started that group in my last year in New York, and I then moved to San Francisco, and the first assignment I had as the associate conductor of the San Francisco Opera was to prepare the cast and conduct for the first 2 weeks the rehearsals of John Adams' new piece, new opera, Dr. Atomic. So for those first 2 weeks, Donald Runicle's music director, who was going to be conducting the performances eventually, was not in town. He was at the Edinburgh Festival. So I was it for those first 2 weeks of the rehearsal and rehearsal process. And on my left every day was John Adams, and on my right every day was the great stage director, Peter Sellers, and we put that piece together, and we all learned it together, the cast, and that was such a wonderful, terrifying event, and that's how I began my relationship with John Adams. So we've since worked together many times since then. I was the assistant conductor 3 years later. I was the assistant conductor for the Metropolitan Opera production of Dr. Atomic, and I've also worked with him when he conducted the Los Angeles Philharmonic of A Flowering Tree, which was the opera that he composed right after Dr. Atomic. So, and the San Francisco Symphony, where I'm now the resident conductor, has recently recorded Harmony Lera, for which he was present for all of the rehearsals and performances. So it's has been a wonderful opportunity for me to really get to know and to perform a living treasure, really, and one of the most important composers of the 20th and 21st century. So that's basically my story. I stayed with San Francisco Opera for 3 years, went back to the Met for a production of Dr. Atomic in the fall of 2008, and while I was working on a production of Tristan and Isolde and Lyric Opera in January of 2009, I got a phone call from San Francisco Symphony to see if I was interested in auditioning for the resident conductor position there, and so I went in March of 2009 and auditioned, which is also part of it as being music director of the San Francisco Symphony Youth Orchestra, which we could talk about. It's a wonderful ensemble, and I got the job. So that's took me to San Francisco again. So that's where I've been for the last 3 years.
That's a fantastic story, and it just to remind listeners, we're talking with Donato Cabrera, who is guest conductor this week of the concerts by the Illinois Symphony Orchestra in Springfield and Bloomington, and Don spent some time here in our listening area when he was at the University of Illinois. Your story actually illustrates a few different ways that conductors can get gigs, if you can count music school a gig, and it essentially is. So in that case, you applied along with the masses. That's one method.
Right.
Second was that you actually just kind of got invited to guest conduct, in this case because of a connection with Professor McCall.
That's right.
McCall.
That's right.
And then because of connections to connections, through a one-on-one interview, you got hired with the opera.
That's right.
So no real application process there.
Right.
And then you got invited to apply for the San Francisco Symphony.
That's right.
That kind of covers all the bases of the ways one can become a conductor. Have I missed any?
You know, you're right. I actually haven't put those together in that way before, but that is basically the ways that one can get a job as a young conductor. And you know, that also illustrates the fact that there's no set path, that when you are a young conductor, that you need to be open for any possibility and meet as many people as possible, observe as many rehearsals as possible, apply to as many positions that you feel that you're ready to apply for, and always keep your feelers out and always be open for change, because I guarantee you that will happen. Change will happen, and you need to be ready for it. In a million years, I never imagined that I would be the resident conductor of the San Francisco Symphony, even while I was just 3 years before that the associate conductor of the San Francisco Opera. I thought that because I had sort of made the switch over to opera, that that was going to be my path, that I would be maybe one of the myriad of assistant conductors of the Metropolitan Opera, and maybe part of the year go to Chicago, maybe part of the year maybe go back to San Francisco Opera, maybe start expanding that network. I thought my exposure, which was my initial love, really, I'm a French horn player, so I knew the Mahler excerpts for all the symphonies when I was in high school. So I originally thought I was going to be in the symphonic world, but my path at the time was one of operatic repertoire. But because I had, you know, while I had been in San Francisco working at San Francisco Opera, I had occasionally stepped in to do a brass sectional or a woodwind sectional for the youth orchestra. And they knew my work through that, and I had met while I was at Manhattan School of Music a few years previously. I had done a master class with Michael Tilson Thomas. Who knew then that he would remember me, that people on his staff that would tell him, oh, he's done a wonderful job when he's occasionally rehearsed the youth orchestra. You know, you never know how all of these things can come together to create an opportunity for you.
Which is also a good argument for making sure that you're well prepared for everything you do, because somebody important might just pay attention.
That's exactly right. I mean, you still have to be able to do a good job and be able to get up on the podium and make an orchestra sound better. So yeah, right. You have to be ready to go.
So you left off one organization, which you just started with this year, the Green Bay Symphony. What was the process of that one? Was that a regular application
process?
That's
right. Maybe it's a combination of both. So in 2000 and, gosh, I'm forgetting which year is which now, but I think it was 2009, of March of 2009, I was invited to participate in the Bruno Walter National Conductors Preview, which is put on by the American League of Orchestras. And that year was in Nashville with the Nashville Symphony, and there were, I think, six conductors that were invited to conduct the Nashville Symphony for 20 minutes at a time. And it's also an opportunity for orchestras that are in the process of perhaps finding their next music director to come and observe young conductors. So one of the orchestras that was there at that time was the Green Bay Symphony. So after my 20-minute session, they approached me and liked what they saw, and they gave me their information. I gave them my information, and I don't know, a couple of months later, they emailed me and asked me if I'd be interested in applying for the position. And I was, so I sent my materials in. But from that point on, I was one of the many applicants that they had approached. And I was then selected to be one of the four final music director candidates, much like I am here now being considered for the Illinois Symphony. And last April, I was the final four. I was the fourth candidate, the final candidate. And again, this week is reminds me very much of the process that I went through in Green Bay. Every day, I had many, many meetings with various members of the community, the search committee. I would go speak with the elementary schools and just as many opportunities for people to meet me and for me to meet the members of the community. So after that week of meetings and events and the concert, they asked me if I'd be interested in being the next music director, and I said yes. So that That just started, basically, and the first concert of our season was just this last Saturday. In fact, it's the beginning of Green Bay Symphony Orchestra's 98th season, which is really quite remarkable.
So you could be around, you hope you'll be around when they're at 100.
Oh, yes, we're already planning. I signed a four-year contract, so I'm...
So you better be there.
I better be there.
So what happens, Don, if you get this gig at the Illinois Symphony and you've got the one in Green Bay,
mm-hmm.
what happens in San Francisco? Can you keep doing that too?
Unfortunately, no. I very much, of course, I love my work with the San Francisco Symphony, but you know, that position at the San Francisco Symphony is designed to sort of give a leg up to young conductors, and it's not designed for people to stay for many, many, many years. You know, the average tenure of my predecessors in the same position I have in San Francisco has been 4 to 5 years. So I'm now finishing in the middle of my third season, and that's just about right. So I would have to give that one up, unfortunately.
Just curious, because I know that many conductors straddle lots of jobs or juggle lots of jobs, and I'm always amazed how they manage to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, well, let's move on to a little bit of music here. Have you worked the soloist for this concert by the Illinois Symphony? And again, we're talking with Donato Cabrera, who's guest conducting the ISO this week, is Awadajan Pratt, who is another local boy born in Normal, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever worked with him before?
No, but, you know, I think I'm fairly sure I met him when I was in New York, when I was living in New York. We have some mutual friends, of course, but we never worked together. So I'm so excited that he was the soloist chosen for my concert with the Illinois Symphony. And so I'm very much looking forward to meeting him. We'll meet each other on Thursday. So that's coming up soon.
And hopefully it'll be good chemistry.
Let's hope. I'm sure it will. Usually those things go very well.
Well, here's the opening to the Grieg Piano Concerto. It's a very famous opening, one of the more famous, I'd say, better known of piano concertos. And it'll be played by Awadajan Pratt on Friday and Saturday with the Illinois Symphony. You're listening to Live and Local. That was a little bit of the opening of Edvard Grieg's Piano Concerto. You'll hear it played, if you go to hear the Illinois Symphony this week, by Awadajan Pratt and conducted by Donato Cabrera, guest conductor. He's the first this year of a series of music director candidates to take over the Illinois Symphony. And Don, I was just curious, when you said you may have met Awadajan once before, and I did meet him once before, did an interview with him, and I remember it was one of the most uncomfortable I ever did. It doesn't happen too often, but I've not worked with him in a conducting capacity. And you said it usually goes pretty well. If you haven't worked with somebody like that, what is the... what happens? I mean, he's going to breeze in on Thursday, and then you perform on Friday. Do you really get to work with each other, or does he sit down at the piano, you get up on the podium, and you do it?
Well, no, we have a scheduled meeting for, I think, at least an hour, where we will be together in a dressing room, probably somewhere that has a piano, and we'll go through all of the little tricky corners of the concerto that I've found, and maybe perhaps he'll say, oh, by the way, there's also this tempo change I do here. I might do a little faster than normal, slower than normal. So we'll get together and sort of go over the roadmap of the concerto together, and then, you know, this meeting happens, I think, in a couple of hours before our rehearsal. So that's will be it. But you're right; it's sort of a quick little meeting, and then we're off to the races. But it's usually, you know, what I love so much about the symphonic world as opposed to the operatic world is that the level of music making is so amazingly efficient and in such a way that is almost remarkable to observe and to be a part of. But when you get to work with solos of this level, and frankly with an orchestra of this level, you know, everyone knows how things should go, basically, and we're there to sort of dot the I's and cross the T's and make it our own. Yes, it's a very limited time, but it usually works very well.
Audagium is already this going to be the soloist. Did you have a say in the selecting the program for this concert?
Yes, it actually was a really fascinating exercise. So all of the candidates were given the exercise of, well, we were all given the concerto, because obviously the Illinois Symphony had to book, the one thing they would have to book in advance of knowing who the music director candidates would be the soloists for the season. So we were, you know, I was told I had to do the Greek piano concerto, and all the other candidates were told the exact concerto that they were going to be working on and with the soloists. However, for my program, I had to submit three different variants. You know, my first choice, second choice, and third choice of the pieces that surrounded the Greek piano concerto. So my first choice happened to be this program that we're playing now, the Chairman Dances and the Berlioz Romeo and Juliet, the three movements from Romeo and Juliet. And then, gosh, I think I had perhaps, again, it's been almost a year now since I submitted those other two programs, but I think perhaps there was a Dvorak symphony on one, and the third choice was perhaps a Brahms symphony. I can't remember. But then we also had to program an entire season for the other candidate's season. So I submitted a program for Alistair's concert. I submitted a program for all the other candidate concerts, and so did they. And they just, you know, it was a wonderful exercise to see what my programming choices would be for a given season if we had already booked the soloists. So it was actually done really well, and I really enjoyed doing that. So this is a program that I chose.
That's fantastic. And, of course, you've already talked about the connection to John Adams,
yes,
which is wonderful.
And that was definitely what I wanted to do with this concert is have personal connections with the pieces that I had the ability to choose.
And what's your personal connection to Berlioz's Romeo and Juliet? Because this is a piece that really doesn't get done much.
Well, it's
certainly not in its entirety.
Right. So as my one of the roles I have as resident conductor of the San Francisco Symphony, and in my previous positions with San Francisco Opera and New Jersey Symphony, is to cover or be the understudy, in theater parlance, to the music director. So I am the cover conductor for the music director of the San Francisco Symphony, Michael Tilson Thomas, and he is there for 17 weeks out of the year. So I have to be ready to go at a moment's notice for any rehearsal or concert that he is conducting. So last year, in the fall of 2010, he was conducting these three movements, as well as, I can't even remember what the first half was now. But he was having some shoulder problems. And he told me that the night before, there were four performances, so he told me at the end of the Saturday evening's concert, he said that, you know, Donato, my shoulder isn't going so well. There's a possibility. I'm probably going to conduct the first half of the concert, but there's a strong likelihood that I will not conduct the second half of the concert tomorrow afternoon, the Sunday matinee. So went home. I don't know if I even slept. I studied the three movements of the Berlioz, and sure enough, the next day he went out and conducted the first half, and then during intermission he brought in the general manager and the I think the president of the board was there that day, actually, and he brought them in and said, listen, I'm my shoulder's just not doing well today. I need to rest it. Donato's going to have to conduct the second half. So quickly they said, of course, wonderful. The concertmaster was there as well. So I ran downstairs to my office where, of course, my suit was, and I put my suit on and walked out and conducted the Berlioz, these three movements, without ever having rehearsed them before or performed them in my life. And it was a huge success, and I fell in love with these pieces, and I told myself, if I ever have the opportunity to program these pieces, I really want to do it again where I can actually rehearse them, you know,
yes,
put my
right.
stamp on them. So that's the connection to the Berlioz.
Well, it's a fabulous piece in its entirety, and the movements are just gorgeous. And of course, you can sort of choose the good ones, so to speak.
That's right.
Or some of the juicy ones. So I think we'll go out with one of the particularly lovely moments, which is the love scene from Romeo and Juliet of Hector Berlioz. You can hear that movement and two others, along with Grieg's Piano Concerto and John Adams' Chairman Dances, performed by the Illinois Symphony Orchestra, on Friday at 8 o'clock at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts, and on Saturday at 8 o'clock at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois Springfield. The guest conductor is my guest on this portion of Live and Local is Donato Cabrera, and he is the first of several music director candidates who are leading the concerts with the Illinois Symphony this year. So I wish you the very best of luck, both in your new season at Green Bay, the Green Bay Symphony, and through this process with the Illinois Symphony. It's great to talk to you.
Likewise. Thank you so much.